again, everyone, and welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling program as they appear on the WWE Network. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez, and this is episode number 32, and in this edition, we'll be taking a look at the Mid-Atlantic television program that was taped on Wednesday, August 25th, 1982, at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and began airing in local markets beginning the weekend of Saturday, August 28th, 1982. If you like the podcast and want a little more of it on social media, just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod. We update everything when we can, with most of the focus on our Twitter page, but we also have a Facebook page, a Facebook group, and more. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And if you want to follow along with us as we review these shows, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network at WWENetwork.com. You can also follow along by the way of David Taub's write-ups of the network shows, which are available over at MidAtlanticGateway.com. And finally, if you'd like to take an alternate look at this week in wrestling history, head on over to MidSouthPod.com, the Mid-South television wrestling review show with the great Brian Last and Mike Mills, who cover today in Bill Watts' territory, on episode number 36 of their program. It features Ted DiBiase versus Dick Murdoch for the North American title, plus Louisiana champion Iron Mike Sharp, Killer Khan, Mr. Wrestling 2, Hacksaw Duggan, Colonel Buck Robley, The One Man Gang, and more. Check out the Mid-South television wrestling review show, MidSouthPod.com. As I bring in my co-host Roman Gomez here. Roman, you know, they got a pretty stacked lineup over there for today's card on Mid-South television, but I still think what we got going on here, as we've reached the end of August of 1982, still certainly trumps that here in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling.
Oh, lots of great stuff going on in Mid-Atlantic. People coming into the area, feuds escalating and everything. And this episode in particular, you know, Mike, like I was talking to you off air, this was a fun one to watch. You know, it had a good blend, good balance of, you know, lots of superstars and everything. And this was a fun one to watch. And I'm looking forward to talking about this week's episode.
Yeah, and I guess I'll do a little bit of housekeeping here, you know, as we get started. We are 3 weeks removed from Roddy Piper not only losing the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship, but getting stabbed in the chest and quickly turned babyface. 2 weeks ago, we have Jim Crockett showing up on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and resigning as the president of the NWA. On Worldwide that weekend, Wahoo McDaniel, who's already dealing with Ric Flair, gets attacked by Sergeant Slaughter, gets his headdress torn up, which is leading to a battle with them, which we'll get to here. We heard everything that went down last week with everybody involved. Just things are going haywire here all over the place, and I'm not sure how many people listened through and listened to the results, so I want to bring up a couple of them from last week's show, which tie into what we are going to be watching here this week. Now, Ric Flair is still in the area as the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. He is going to be a fixture here over the next couple of weeks for the most part. And the same date that the last television show was taped on Wednesday, they also had a card in Wadesboro, North Carolina, where Ric Flair defeated Jack Briscoe. The next night on Thursday in Winston-Salem, Flair defeated Roddy Piper, who was substituting for Jack Briscoe. So there was another NWA title defense for him, and he had his final title defense for a little while in Charleston on Friday night, where he went to a double countout with Wahoo McDaniel. Now, that takes us to Saturday night. Saturday night in Greensboro, Wahoo McDaniel defeated Sergeant Slaughter in a lumberjack match, and Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a Siberian glove match. Both Koloff and Sergeant Slaughter last week on the show talked about, basically hinted at those matches that would be coming up. Slaughter also talked Sunday, and before we get to that, I will mention that also on that Sunday, August 22nd, in Toronto at Maple Leaf Gardens, Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood defeated Private Carnoodle and Private Nelson in a 2-out-of-3-falls match to win the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship. That is Steamboat's 5th reign with the belts. It's Youngblood's 3rd, and it's actually their first together as a team. Steamboat had won titles previously with Paul Jones three times and with Dino Bravo all between 1977 and 1980, while Youngblood had won titles with Johnny Weaver and Porkchop Cash at the end of 1981 and earlier in 1982, both of which we covered in earlier episodes of the podcast. Now, Sunday in Charlotte at the Coliseum, that's when we got the big match, Hair versus Title, NWA United States Heavyweight Championship, Sergeant Slaughter defending against Wahoo McDaniel. Wahoo McDaniel gets the victory. And it was the third time that Wahoo had won the U.S. title. The first two reigns that he had lasted a combined 48 days. This was Slaughter's second reign. It comes to an end after 76 days to the man who he had not defeated. If you remember, on previous episodes of the show, Slaughter was awarded the title in June after Wahoo was jumped by Roddy Piper and Don Morocco and couldn't defend the championship. Slaughter would not win another singles title directly for Jim Crockett Promotions after this, but he would win the NWA Canadian heavyweight title from Angelo Mosca in June of 1983 and hold that until January of 1984. There's also an incident after the match that takes place, which involves Leroy Brown and Sir Oliver Humperdinck, that we're going to get to a little later on as well. And another notable result on that show from Charlotte was Roddy Piper, Jerry Briscoe, and Jimmy Valiant defeating Ivan Koloff, Leroy Brown, and Ole Anderson. And why that's a notable result is Ole Anderson was up from Georgia bringing the NWA World Tag Team Championship belts back to the area. August 14th was the last time that the World Tag Team Championship was discussed on WTBS. As we'll find out during this show, the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship begins to disappear, and suddenly, if you're watching WTBS, the National Tag Team Championship begins to reappear with a lot of added importance. And in fact, on August 29th, the weekend of the show we're reviewing today, the Samoans defeated the Freebirds in Atlanta to win the titles. And as an aside, the Samoans would only last until the end of the year there, and may very well be the answer to the trivia question of who was the first talent ever poached by Vince McMahon Jr., as they were feuding with the Freebirds and the Moondogs over the national tag titles. And in January of 1983, they just up and left, which set off a series of events that actually eventually led it to the creation of the Road Warriors. So there's that. And also to be noted, on Sunday, August 22nd, in Cincinnati on a Georgia Northern tour, Ric Flair defeated Tommy Rich to retain the NWA title. And that's going to be Flair's last match until he heads alongside Jim Crockett Jr. and some others to the NWA conventions, which begin in San Juan, Puerto Rico on August 29th. And that's going to run until Tuesday the 31st, when Flair comes back into the Mid-Atlantic area. Now, he'll come back in on the 6th in Greenville, on September 6th, in Greenville against Roddy Piper, and then become a focal point of TV again. So just wanted to get some of that out there and let you know some of the backstory on what we're going to be hearing today, Roman. And it starts off with Jack Briscoe in the commentary position. He's joined by Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood, and Roman, Paul Jones, he has just turned dirty. He has joined the House of Humperdinck. He has his eyes on championships. He says that's the reason he's joined the House, and he's got his sights set on Jack Briscoe. Any thoughts before we go ahead and play this interview here about Briscoe and the newly turned Paul Jones?
Yeah, just something a little bit different back then compared to now is that you'll hear in the interview where Briscoe says he got jumped in the parking lot. You know, nowadays, if that had happened, there would have been 217 camera crews there filming it, you know, so it just kind of adds to the illusion of something dirty that nobody was around, and Briscoe gets jumped in the parking lot, therefore he's on crutches and he's going to make the challenge for next week.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that I mentioned earlier on that Roddy Piper had subbed for Jack Briscoe in that NWA title match in Winston-Salem the previous Thursday was because Briscoe shows up here on crutches, so exactly what happened, if he hurt his knee, rolled an ankle, whatever it was, he was out. But they had the perfect reason that he was out, which was Paul Jones had done some damage to him, as you're going to hear Briscoe complain about, and he makes a very strong and bold challenge for next week.
Paul Jones will be here. Also, a newcomer, Joe LeDuc, out of Montreal, Canada, and in tag team action, Roddy Piper and Rick Steamboat team together. And what a match they're going to have against Ninja and Juan Reynoso. And speaking of young men, right here comes one who is our Mid-Atlantic champion, and he's on crutches this week, Jack Briscoe. Jack?
Well, I'm on crutches for one reason, Bob, and that's because, number one, Paul Jones, the man that was bought off by Humperdinck and his friend Greg Valentine, actually jumped me in a parking lot and tried to break my leg. They didn't get it broken. It's a little bit sore. But I tell you what, I want to put out a challenge right here and right now to Paul Jones. You think you're so tough you can jump people in parking lots? Next week, right here on television, Paul, I'm going to put this Mid-Atlantic Championship on the line for you, Paul Jones. Just find out how really tough you are.
So, Jack, what you're saying, you're challenging to a match live right here
I'm
next
I'm challenging
week.
Paul Jones to a match right here, not in a parking lot, Paul Jones, right here in the ring where millions of people can see it, and for the Mid-Atlantic Championship.
Oh, Jack, man, that's fantastic, Jack.
You don't have anything to prove, man.
I got a lot to prove. I'm sitting here on a crutch. My leg is all sore. Look at my elbow. Took all the skin off of my elbow. Paul Jones, you don't do this to me and get away with it.
100%.
Yeah, are you going to be 100%?
I will be ready. I will be ready next week. Paul Jones, if you're man enough, if you're any kind of man at all, you will meet me right here in this ring next week, and I'll have the title on the line for you.
All right, fans, the challenge right there from Jack Briscoe to Paul Jones. And
he's hot.
I think he has reason to be hot.
It just proves the point right there. You don't mess around with Briscoe, whether it be in the ring or out of the ring, right?
That is right.
He's going to, well, well, I've got a little bit to say here, just a little bit to say about Leroy Brown. Everybody, the big man that was bought out by Sir Oliver Humperdinck. I've had some dealings with him in the past, some wrestling matches. There's a lot to be done, and there's a few things that are going to be done. Some of the things that are going to be done is something about his manager, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, about sticking his nose. He's gone around telling everybody that he's a businessman, that he's a business manager, that he's not a professional wrestler. But all the fans have seen that somehow, some way, that he seems to be sticking his greasy, grimy fingers in the match, trying to distract me and other wrestlers.
Right.
Well, things are going to be happening. Things are going to be done. There's some other news I'd like to talk about. The fact that Sergeant Slaughter has lost the U.S. belt.
And what about that?
To Wahoo McDaniel. And it seems as though that things in the past couldn't be done or get done by the NWA. But now it's come around. Things have pulled out of the hat a little bit, like a 30-day suspension. No pay, can't wrestle. Sergeant Slaughter's on that list with a 30-day suspension, can't do anything. And it seems as though that those other guys on the other side of the fence seems that they could get by with all these things, and the NWA wasn't going to do anything about it. Well, they stepped right in and did something about it this time. Sarge, you got a 30-day suspension, call it a vacation, whatever. Pay, no money. It's just tough, brother.
And he's minus that belt.
That's right, that's right.
I'll tell you what, Rick. You know, you said the right thing. What goes around comes around. Wahoo won the belt back. But as you all know, Wahoo McDaniels and Jimmy Valiant got their hair cut by you, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, the man that is causing havoc all over the Mid-Atlantic and the worldwide wrestling area, the Banny Rooster. Let me tell you something, my friend. Jimmy Valiant couldn't be here today because he's out defending his TV title. But brother, he told me to pass on a word to you. For every one of the hairs that you cut off of his head, he says that he is going to end your manager career forever, Humperdinck. And if I am not mistaken, Jimmy Valiant will do it because he's proven it before. He took the title away from Koloff, and I guarantee you, just as sure as I'm standing here, he will end your career, Humperdinck. And that's the root of all evil, the House of Humperdinck. Leroy Brown, Paul Jones, you name it. The list goes on and on. But Valiant is after your tail, Humperdinck, and everybody else is too.
All right, fans, and we'll have action in the ring. We'll see Jay Youngblood in action when we come back, right after we take this.
Roman, there's no way in the world that that interview didn't go overtime. I refuse to believe it. Ricky Steamboat, very meticulous and slow in trying to get out some of his thoughts on Sergeant Slaughter. And then Jay Youngblood, very Jay Youngblood promo right there, says that Jimmy Valiant, for every hair that was cut on his head, that's how he will end Sir Oliver Humperdinck's managing career. I don't know how that can happen. I would figure you can only end a man's managing career once, but okay, fine, whatever it is. But this seems to be the genesis of Jimmy Valiant hair matches in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling here, though. going in there and getting his hair cut by Leroy Brown and Sir Oliver Humperdinck, Roman. But I don't know if that those interviews tacked on to the end of Briscoe's did a whole lot to further along Briscoe's challenge for Paul Jones next week, which was a pretty big deal.
Yes, it is. You know, you have the champion on crutches, and he's going to heroically wrestle next week, you know, so soon after being on crutches. And yeah, I thought maybe they could have spaced the Steamboat interview out a little bit, maybe get it a little closer to the Wahoo Slaughter incident, which we're going to see later. But yeah, to me, it was kind of a long way to introduce the show with those three interviews.
Well, for how much I ramble on this show, I shouldn't say too much about Steamboat and Youngblood there. But yeah, I mean, kind of they buried the lead there a little bit by the end of it with Jack Briscoe challenging Paul Jones. Obviously, big deal because it's the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship. But as you know, mentioned, Jack Briscoe's now hurt as well, too. So there's a new angle which is being played into this whole thing. But it leads into our first match as Jay Youngblood leaves the podium there and faces Private Nelson inside the ring. Tommy Young is our referee for all of the matches today. As was mentioned, Slaughter has been suspended for 30 days for his actions against Wahoo McDaniel. On episode number 30 of the program, the August 7th edition of the show, we found out that Slaughter was suspended. They spoiled that and Paul Jones's turn with the commercials that were the promos that were inserted into the show. So we knew this was coming. If you've been a regular listener, you knew this stuff was coming down the line. And during this match, Bob runs down the card for the day. And Roman, one thing is obvious from, you know, reading the results of everything that's been taking place and seeing the fact that the two have been split on TV many times in matches, that Private Nelson is certainly in the back seat when it comes to the Marine's Jeep now, isn't he? You know, it's obviously Sergeant Slaughter is driving, but Don Kernoodle has certainly secured his spot in shotgun here as Private Nelson just seems to take a lot of L's around the circuit.
Man, well, nice analogy. The driver, the shotgun, the back seat. Did you want me to talk about this match, Mike, or did you want to play a clip first?
No, you know, the only thing I really have clipped from this is the end of it. We'll hear what goes down at the end and how Youngblood ultimately gets the victory here. But yeah, please go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I thought it was a good contest, and Nelson twice put Youngblood in the Cobra clutch but could not put him away. And maybe that's why he's a private, because the Sarge, if he puts the Cobra clutch on somebody, that normally means a victory, you know, but Nelson could not put away Youngblood. And I thought it was a cool finish how Youngblood got whipped into the turnbuckle and jumped over the top rope and kind of like baited Nelson into following him. And then Youngblood hit him with the shoulder block in the midsection and then came over the top rope with the sunset flip. But I thought that was kind of a cool way to finish it. And this easily could have been a TV main event if they wanted to go that way.
Oh, absolutely. They could have tacked on a little bit more time to it for sure. And, you know, not only did Nelson apply the Cobra Clutch twice, right before he applied the first one, he actually hit the Slaughter Cannon clothesline. So he did everything that seemed to be right there. And I'll go ahead and play the end of this match here between Jay Youngblood and Private Nelson.
Nelson puts it right back on the attack. He's hit a hard power slam. Here's Nelson in the corner, up on the rope. Missed the elbow. Off of the rope. Hard down with the elbow, and Youngblood rolls right out from under him. There's a chop. Tommy Hawk chop. Now the turnbuckle. Good comeback right here by Youngblood. It puts him in the corner and over the rope. Diving over the rope. It's got him pinned. One, two, three. Coming over the rope. And Private Nelson is irate. Coming over the ropes and over the back. Watch Youngblood here as he goes into the corner, right over that top rope in slow motion. Watch it when he comes back. Nelson goes in, runs into a shoulder. And while he's doubled over, diving over the rope goes Youngblood. Pins him. One, two, three, and it's all over with our winner, Jay Youngblood. We'll be back.
There we hear the end of that match there. Youngblood getting the victory over a game Private Nelson. And Roman, I mentioned earlier on that Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood have won the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship away from the Privates up in Toronto. And as you didn't hear any mention of those titles when it came to Private Nelson or Ricky Steamboat or Jay Youngblood, any of them at all. A lot of old school fans hate when titles are referred to as props. And I'm one of those people. Big fan of championships. Came up in the era that we're talking about here, so they still mean something to me. I used to go into the Inside Wrestling, go into the back pages there, see the roll call of champions every month. That was very, very important to me. But the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship in its history has been basically a prop, whether it be Ricky Steamboat and Paul Jones, or in this case here, with Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood and the Privates. The reality is when the NWA World Tag Team Championship is in the area, as it was for a long, long time, courtesy of the Andersons, especially, but now upcoming here with Steamboat and Youngblood, and then obviously Slaughter and Kernoodle as we enter 1983, you know, those Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championships may have been the most forgettable belts out of any major championship. You know, they did have the Brass Knuckles title there with Cyclone Negro and Blackjack Mulligan, I think in 76, 77, around that time. But, I mean, other than that, later on there were the six-man titles and the U.S. Tag Team Championships that were forgotten about at different, you know, different times. But the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championships truly were an afterthought almost instantly now that the World Tag Titles were back in the area.
Yeah, you read my mind when you were mentioning forgotten titles, because, like you said, with the Brass Knuckles, that was one of those belts that you would never see it defended every week or anything, but like on a major card, they might, oh, the Brass Knuckles Championship is on the line. But other than that, you wouldn't hear anything about it. And the Mid-Atlantic Tag Titles, once in a blue moon, you'd hear something about it, or it was kind of hard to keep track of who was the champions, because whoever was the champions wouldn't wrestle on TV every week. They would disappear, or they'd split them up in singles matches. You could tell that the Mid-Atlantic Tag Titles were easily not the most important pushed belts in the area. There's no doubt about that.
No, and I mean, from this point on, I mean, they're always an afterthought, you know, right down to Black Bart and Ron Bass. Essentially, the belts just disappear with them, and that's it. And then we ended up getting the United States Tag Team Championships a little bit later on down the line, but that's way later on down the line than what we're dealing with right here in 1982. And we've got guys coming back into the area, big names coming into the area. Ric Flair obviously in as a traveling world champion. But we've got members being added to the House of Humperdinck. No offense to the Ninja or Matt Bourne, who have been forgotten about here, but rank a little bit higher on the scale. We're going to see two debut today. The first one being the former United States heavyweight champion, Greg the Hammer Valentine, back down from the WWF. He's teaming up with Leroy Brown to face off against Ron Ritchie and Keith Larson. And man, Valentine, you can tell he was making a little bit of money in New York there. Great white robe, red lettering and accents, just really a great looking robe. An unusual look for Valentine in that he had these trunks on that were half and half, red in the front and black in the back, just kind of a more unique look for him than we're used to seeing here, but looks like $1 million. Leroy Brown, a big guy. Valentine hits people hard, and it was a long night for Ron Ritchie and Keith Larson, especially here, as those guys went to work on them. A lot of clubbering and plundering and ultimately getting the victory here. Valentine dropping the elbow on Larson, but nice to see Greg Valentine back in the area here. Kind of an unusual team with Brown, but it gets him on the show and puts both of them to work, just showing off their power.
Yeah, Valentine, the newest member of the House of Humperdinck that just keeps growing and growing until people leave like a week later, like Matt Bourne did. But he just keeps acquiring talent. And they mentioned that Valentine wrestled at Madison Square Garden, but he heard that Slaughter lost the U.S. title to Wahoo. And he's back in the area because of it. And I thought it was good that they had mentioned that 4 or 5 years prior that Valentine had broke Wahoo's leg. I always like when wrestling will mention their history, you know, when they mention something like that, you know. I think that's good to kind of tie in loose ends, you know. That adds a little bit of fuel to the fire. And Brown and Valentine were very dominant in this contest. And like you said, Valentine very aggressive, very hard-hitting, and it was a good win for Valentine and Leroy Brown.
Yeah, Wahoo McDaniel had his leg broken famously by Greg Valentine in 1977, led to the shirt, "I Broke Wahoo's Leg," that legendary picture of Greg Valentine sitting there with that huge smile on his face, wearing the Mid-Atlantic Championship, proudly wearing that shirt. Greg Valentine had not been the United States heavyweight champion since November 24th, 1980, when Ric Flair defeated him in Greenville, South Carolina. When we started doing this podcast and started covering the show, Sergeant Slaughter was walking around with that black strap United States heavyweight champion. Back in 1980, Greg Valentine was actually the first person to hold that belt. I can tell you that because I have Dick Bourne's Jim Crockett Promotions United States Heavyweight Championship book in my hands. That is available on Amazon or over at the MidAtlanticGateway.com. Definitely pick up that book. It is fantastic. All of his books are fantastic, but it's great for times like this when we're able to tie that kind of history together here in, with what we're watching. And it won't take long before Greg Valentine is certainly back into the mix heavy here. And the match was what it was there. It went about 6.5 minutes. And like we mentioned, Valentine gets the victory alongside Leroy Brown and the House of Humperdinck. We then have our local promo spot that we, of course, don't get any local promos for. In this case, it's Porkchop Cash and King Parsons who we get in lieu of the local spots. They're upset with the House of Humperdinck. That's pretty much all that was said there. And then King Parsons gets away from the desk, gets in the ring, and faces off against number one Paul Jones in a match that went a few seconds under 5 minutes here. Paul Jones gets the victory, and it was okay. You know, Paul Jones, very audible Paul Jones, as he always is, making a lot of sounds in the match. King Parsons, still very young, early in his career, solid, but not really wasn't all that great of a match. And the finish, I thought, was a little bit weak.
Yes, definitely. And early in the contest, Cottle mentions that Piper's change of heart occurred after Humperdinck offered him a contract. And it's just kind of interesting that, you know, just mentioning that, they're really not playing up Piper getting stabbed. I don't know. I thought that was something that was kind of interesting, mentioning that. But yeah, the finish with the three drop kicks and Parsons, you know, the first one barely hit Paul Jones in the shoulder blade in the back. It looked real awkward. His timing was weird. He hits the second one, and Jones immediately pops up. And just so Parsons can miss the third one. I don't know. To me, it just looked weak. And something else I noticed in the contest, that Humperdinck was walking around ringside, and he had his to the fans, and there was no barricade. And this is just a couple weeks after Piper had gotten stabbed by a fan. And, you know, granted, Humperdinck did not have the heat that Piper did, but I just thought that was kind of interesting that a heel manager would be allowed to get so close to the fans, turn his back on the fans, and be like 2 feet away. You know, it just something I thought of. And who knows how the TV tapings were. Maybe they had security there that, you know, had a metal detector. I don't know. That was just something that struck me during this contest. But yeah, it was a below average contest, I thought, and the finish did look pretty weak.
Yeah, and the camera work didn't help that either, because even if Parsons actually hit the first one, which he may have, we really didn't know. The fact is, it made it look like he essentially missed three drop kicks in a row. I mean, he just, you know, or at the very least, if you're watching, you didn't think he hit him hard enough to put Paul Jones away. And
no.
And ultimately, you know, the Indian Deathlock that Paul Jones put on looked good and everything. It just was, unfortunately, it wasn't the greatest here, but we'll let you judge for yourself here as we'll play the end of it for you.
Parsons down with a slam. Going to go with a drop kick again. And again, when Jones gets up, that time Jones backed away and he missed it. Indian Deathlock, Paul Jones now, getting Parsons in a position, and he's got the Indian Deathlock on him. Parsons screaming with pain, saying, yes, referee Tommy Young says ring the bell. Here comes Humperdinck. Jones still got it locked in, refusing now to break the Indian Deathlock on Parsons. And Parsons rolling around, holding that knee. as Jones really put the pressure on. He comes back to kick him and stomp him in that knee. And here comes Porkchop Cage. That broke it up. Porkchop charging in to give his friend some assistance right there, and he needed it as Jones continued to kick and stomp away at the knee as he really put the pressure on it out of that Indian deathlock. Rolling out of the ring now.
So there you hear Porkchop Cash coming in to make the save as Paul Jones continued to put the boots to King Parsons once he finally released him from the Indian deathlock, and that was that. And then it was time for Wahoo McDaniel to join Bob Cottle at the announced position to talk a little bit about Slaughter's suspension. And we're going to see tape from the match on the previous Sunday, the Indian strap match, where it looked as though Wahoo McDaniel was going to be able to keep his hair since he defeated Slaughter and won the U.S. title. But Leroy Brown and Sir Oliver Humperdinck had some different plans.
Fans at ringside right now, a real pleasure for us to introduce the new U.S. heavyweight champion, Wahoo McDaniel. Wahoo.
Well, you know, it's good to be here, and, you know, like I said, when a man like Slaughter has to wrestle by the rules, he got a 30-day suspension, he's going to be gone, and, you know, we have a film of what everything had happened, and he still tried to cut my hair. He got Valiant, got his hair cut, but the hair will grow back, but I guarantee you, the money that they fine him and the pride that he lost by losing this belt, believe me, it's more than offsets it.
Wahoo, you're right, and I say, as you say, that belt meant so much to him, but I think right here we're going to see what brought about the suspension, is that right?
That's right. You can see right here at the end of the strap match, I touched the corner, I got him, and it's a hard-fought battle. And as you can see right here, he jerked me into to the referee and the belt. Then he hit me with the belt right there twice, and then he got out of the strap and tied me up. And they had a pair of scissors on there, which I didn't know about at the time. Leroy Brown brought a pair of scissors down there. There's Humperdinck there, right? And it's 3-on-1. They got it. You know, they really see there. And right there you see he kicks poor Richie. And they're cutting my hair right here. They cut a couple big hunks out of it. And Valiant came in to help me. And as you see right here, Leroy got him. And they grabbed the scissors. And as you see right here, they cut his hair. And I tell you, that Valiant boy, he's hot at that Humperdinck. And you can't blame him. And you see right there? And they think that's really smart. But I'll tell you one thing. I got him where it hurts, right in the pocketbook. And I got the belt back. And, you know, it's just a good feeling. But like I said, Valiant, he's upset. His hair is cut. I got a big hunk cut out of mine. But, you know, I've got something to cover up for it. But I'm going to tell you something. Valiant gets his hands on that Humperdinck. Brother, it's going to be something, man. I see right here, you see Humperdinck's got him a new man here, right. Joe LeDuc. And he's a tough, big, rugged individual. And I imagine Humperdinck's going to surround himself with anybody he can to protect himself, because that's the only way he's going to ever get out of it, is get a lot of big, rugged, tough guys around him. And maybe Humperdinck will be around for a while, but I tell you, when Valor gets a hold of him, I doubt if Humperdinck will be enough left of him to manage. And I'll tell you, Valentine, you want this title. You think you can get it? Come get it.
All right, fans, that's it at ringside. Now let's go to the ring and the introduction now for our next match.
There we hear from the new United States Heavyweight Champion, Wahoo McDaniel. Roman, a lot going on in that interview.
Yeah, it was not a long clip, but, man, a lot of stuff happened, you know, with Wahoo getting his hair cut. And I thought it was pretty smart how they had Ron Ritchie to be the one to try to do the run-in, because let's face it, if Humperdinck had kicked a Steamboat or a Briscoe or a Jake Roberts and they sold, it probably wouldn't have been too believable, you know. It had to be Humperdinck making the save, because Leroy Brown and Slaughter were working over Wahoo, and then Valiant comes in to try to save the day. He gets his hair cut, and hey, they did a lot in that short little clip that they showed.
Yes, you were able to pretty much hear the end of the match there. Slaughter had tied Wahoo up with the strap after the match was over. Leroy Brown handed Sarge some scissors. They proceeded to cut his hair. You know, for Leroy Brown, he goes, it's like Don Morocco holding Hogan's arms on Saturday night's main event before WrestleMania 2. Nobody remembers him as an accomplice in the deal anymore. They just they always remember on the person that was actually doing the damage there. So Sergeant Slaughter, Leroy Brown escapes that one, although I'm sure, obviously, Ricky Steamboat, we heard earlier on, not happy about that. As you mentioned, Ron Ritchie fails at making the save. Jimmy Valiant goes in there, and that was that. And then we heard at the end of the interview a man getting in the ring, which caught Wahoo McDaniel's eye, the second new big-name member added to the House of Humperdinck, Big Joe Ledoux, which is J-O-S-L, lowercase e, D-U-C, but on the graphic that they showed, it was J-O-E-L-E, capital D-U-K-E. Hey, I guess you are in North Carolina there. So, yeah, Joe Ledoux, it would be, at least for this week here, as he goes in and takes on Mike Davis, Roman.
Another acquisition by Humperdinck, and I thought this was a really good way to debut him. He came off very, very strong, and when Davis was able to get in the offense, it really didn't faze him at all. And I thought this was a really good way for him to come in and establish himself as the tough guy that we know he is. And he did a move you don't see very often. You would see it years later with the Midnight Express when they would do their flapjack, but to put Davis in a bear hug and then just drop him face first, I thought that was kind of cool. And then he hit a leg drop, and a good leg drop, a believable looking leg drop, something that looked like it would have hurt to come out and get the victory.
Yeah, under 4 minutes, Mike Davis takes a heck of a butt whipping here. As you mentioned, Ledoux wins with that leg drop. This was his first time ever in Mid-Atlantic. He had been mostly in, you know, such a mainstay in Florida and Georgia for so many years. And at this point, he was actually in Southeastern working for Fuller. And he had won the Southeastern and Alabama titles down there. And he was feuding with Bob Armstrong and ultimately would lose a loser leaves town match to Armstrong on September 6th, which puts him up in Mid-Atlantic full-time here. But believe it or not, as this show is being taped, he is still the Southeastern champion. He doesn't lose the Southeastern belt to Bob Armstrong until August 30th. So there's a little small factoid there about Joe Ledoux as he enters the Mid-Atlantic area. And what a great pro wrestler face. What a great character Joe Ledoux was. There's obviously the legendary incident of cutting his arm with the axe on Memphis TV. There was the famous cover of the wrestler, I believe it was, where it's Joe Ledoux against Scott Casey, I believe it is, and the referee is trying to pull Joe Ledoux off and the bloody face. It's such a legendary character and such a believable wrestling presence.
Yes, and you mentioned one of the items that I was going to talk about with when he cut himself on Memphis TV, he was taking a blood oath that he was going to get revenge on Lawler. And he took an axe and put it to his own forearm to draw blood. I mean, it was just such a different thing to do. It was crazy. And for those of you that are not familiar with him, look him up on YouTube. I mean, I remember growing up watching Georgia Championship Wrestling, and Gordon Solie would have a video of him pulling a bus, you know, and they would just do these crazy feats of strength. And there was one where he was in the middle of a 10-man tug of war. He had five guys on each side of him. They were connected with the chain, and Ledoux held his ground. You know, they would do things like that to get him over as a monster. And there is one, Mike, I'm sure you've seen it, that has stood up through the test of time, is when he bench pressed Jerry Lawler, threw him over the top rope about 8 feet away and made him land on a table. And when that was pretty much unheard of for guys to hit a table or go through a table back then. And I watched that video again today, and it really stood the test of time of just like, oh my gosh, did he really just do that? So yeah, I was excited to see him in the area making his debut this week.
Stood the test of time for Jerry Lawler, too, because that's the one where he broke his leg on the landing of that.
Yeah.
And was out for a while. You know, Ledoux would do those strongman feats, holding the car back with his feet, with his back up against the wall. You know, one of the funny things here is, you know, and he talks about being familiar with Jimmy Valiant, as we'll hear later on from their time in Memphis. But even before that, when Jimmy was teaming up with Johnny and going through the Midwest, not only in the Bruisers territory, but in the AWA, you were getting matches where they were having tug of wars with the Valiants against Larry the Axe Henning and Joe Ledoux. So, I mean, just a what a fixture of wrestling, and one of the most believable characters, you know, especially if you're a kid, because you look at him and you go, well, why would you intentionally do that to yourself? you find out later on it's dedication to the business and drawing money, and that's why they did it. But just a terrifying presence here, as we'll hear him speak alongside Sir Oliver Humperdinck about why he's in the area.
All right, fans, and right now at ringside, of course, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, and here is the newest member of the House of Humperdinck, Joe Ledoux.
That's exactly right, Big Joe. Heard that there were threats out on me. Heard that there was people out to hurt me, and he, being a friend of mine, won't let that happen. Ain't that right, Joe?
Mr. Humperdinck, I've come here in this area to say that anybody that would like to hurt my friend, Sir Humperdinck, they'll have to go through me. Now, I've heard a few comments before I've come to this ring and behind this microphone, and I didn't come here to win no popularity contest. I've come here to make money. I've come here to prove that I'm a better man than whoever is watching now. And I've come here at the demand of my friend, Mr. Humperdinck. Now, if he wants to cut hair, that's his business. If he wants to do anything he wants, that's his business. But when he comes and asks me, ladies and gentlemen, you don't know me. My name is Joe Ledoux. And they call me the Canadian Freight Train. Now, anybody around here, that includes the Indians you've got, the champions that you've got. I've heard there's a lot of good competition, with the best competition in this area. Well, I'm here to find out. So all I am is a lumberjack, but a strong one. And Mr. Wahoo McDaniel, Mr. Jimmy Valiant, Mr. Whoever you are out there, you think you're man enough and good enough to take me. Well, I'm here, and I'm here to stay.
That's exactly right. You got it right from the source, right from the horse's mouth. Now, I'm not going to be pushed around by anybody, by any organization, by any man, or by anything. So Joe is here to make sure that nobody gets their greasy, grimy hands on me until they get by this animal first. And I mean it. They're going to have to beat him before they get their hands on me. And I'm going to guarantee you that there's not a man in this whole area that can take the big man from Canada. And I'll bet my life on it. I have bet my life on it. He's with me right here, baby.
All right, fans. Joe Ledoux. That's it. Right here.
Who had scarier eyes in pro wrestling than Joe Ledoux? Was there anybody?
I was just going to say, Mike, that his eyes would get as big as saucers, and the way he would tilt his head, like his facials, whether you were a grown man or a little kid watching him, he's one of those people where you would be like, oh my gosh, I would not want to piss him off. He just looked not only physically menacing, but his facials went along with it. And he just looked like he would tear you to shreds if you pissed him off.
And it's amazing the people that saw him as a baby face was a hell of a baby face as well, too. And when you're that believable as anything, you can get people to sway to you. And Joe Ledoux, you know, will maybe never make a Hall of Fame, but he's certainly in my Hall of Fame alongside names like Arn Anderson and Jerry Stubbs and guys like that. You know, those working men, Joe Ledoux was certainly one of them. And he is going to be a welcome addition into the area. Except for the undercard talent, you know, who's now facing off against Greg Valentine, Wahoo McDaniel's there, Joe Ledoux is here. We got a lot of guys who hit really, really hard. And it's unfortunate for the Ninja that Greg Valentine and Joe Ledoux are in the area, because he is in our main event, teamed up with Juan Reynoso against Roddy Piper and Ricky Steamboat. And as you mentioned, Matt Bourne pretty much disappearing from the scene. The Ninja's still there, but now not being mentioned as a part of the House of Humperdinck, has been basically forgotten about by them. He was with Gene Anderson before that. And again, his little time with Humperdinck there for a short period was breathing some life into the Ninja, but they seem to be completely done with him as far as being in the mix with some of the big names.
Yeah, let's not forget he for a short time was hanging out with Ivan Koloff when Koloff was trying to blind Valiant. And yeah, Ninja's being put on the back burner.
Even during this match, I mean, it starts off with Roddy Piper and Juan Reynoso kind of jawing with each other. And Juan Reynoso is kind of the focus of that team here against Piper and Steamboat, who, hey, you know, it's a 5-minute match. They look good together. Ultimately, the end came where Piper hits Reynoso with a chop. Or no, yeah, Steamboat does quick tag out. Piper comes in, hits a neck breaker. And then Ricky Steamboat off the top rope, flying body press, gets the victory. Not a whole lot to really talk about as far as, you know, the match goes, because the whole thing is really centered around the fact that Roddy Piper is standing in the ring with Ricky Steamboat, teamed up with him. You know, with Jimmy Valiant last week, there was almost something more natural about it because both men are so crazy and they were both running on 11. Last week, but with Piper and Steamboat, it's a little bit different and kind of presented a little bit differently here, with Bob Caudle mentioning at the beginning that they're not sure who's going to start the match, but it's much more of a cerebral teaming here with Piper and Steamboat and how they're going to work, as opposed to Valiant and Piper, who were just off the board last week.
Yeah, but you know, it's Steamboat is very popular, just like Valiant, and I thought this was used as to kind of another way to show that Piper is a babyface, you know, and the crowd really got behind him. And something, maybe Bob Caudle was listening to our podcast last week, because on commentary, he said that Piper has not changed, just his partners and his opponents have changed. I thought that was kind of cool, because that's something I said last week. But yeah, it's, Piper was just really aggressive and still doing heel type things. He used a finger poke, you know, he poked Reynoso's eyes and then yelled at him, "Get up!" And I swear the second he said that, I had flashbacks to him and the snooker with the coconut incident. You know, after he walloped Jimmy Snuka in the head with the coconut and he's yelling at him to get up. It reminded me so much of that. But this was a good contest, and the fan in me was just like, man, this is pretty cool, Piper and Steamboat together, because you knew it wasn't going to be a long-term teaming of those two. Piper, let's face it, he's a guy that's meant to be on his own, you know, and but still, as a fan in me, it was cool to see Piper and Steamboat together, and I'm glad I was able to watch this.
Match went about 4 minutes and 45 seconds, and unfortunately, we don't get Roddy Piper to close the show. We get the bad guys to close the show, and one thing, we get a lot of Humperdinck on Mid-Atlantic, and then we heard, you know, a couple weeks ago with the tape that Dick Chappell gave us of Worldwide Wrestling, you know, there is a lot of Humperdinck getting the house over, and there is being driven home, and he does it again here at the end to close the show. The last 2 minutes and 40 seconds or so, we get Humperdinck alongside Paul Jones, Joe Ledoux, and Greg Valentine, all kind of galvanizing to the home viewer why they're here.
Well, we've seen, and we have right here, three wild members of the House of Humperdinck. You just saw two wild men
in
that
ring. I got very little time. I got a lot to say, okay? Number one, Paul Jones, right here. Right. The man who is destined to be the Mid-Atlantic champion hereby accepts the challenge of Jack Briscoe.
Right. Go ahead and tell him. That's right. Let me tell you something, Briscoe. You're a champion. But you slap a coward around long enough, he'll come out of the closet. Well, you came out of the closet and you offered a challenge. Well, I accept right here next week, Briscoe. It's going to be you and me. I got the coward out of the closet. Now I want that belt, and I'm going to show you people how to beat Jack Briscoe and get that belt right here on television.
Fans, that match will be right here live next week.
And speaking of belts, let's talk about the U.S. heavyweight champion, Wahoo McDaniels, soon to be the ex-champion because Greg Valentine's back.
That's right, Wahoo McDaniel. Start looking behind your back, because I'm here to breathe right down your neck. You know that I'm the man that can beat you. You know that I'm the man that put you out of wrestling about 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know how long ago it was, but Wahoo McDaniel was carried out on a stretcher after I put the figure four leg lock on his leg. That's right, I broke it in half, and I became the United States champion. I was United States champion twice over. In fact, my name is still engraved on that belt, Wahoo McDaniel. Just let me tell you something. I'm moving down here for the Big Apple, and I'm coming after you.
That's a threat. That's a threat I wouldn't want to be on the other end of. But there are people threatening me, too. There are people that are worried about me. People claiming I'm doing this and doing that and cutting a little bit of hair. Well, let me tell you something, Jimmy Valiant. You personally said, put the word out on the street, that my life was in jeopardy. Well, let me tell you something. Step in here, Big Joe LeDuc from Canada. Take a look, Jimmy Valiant. You're going to have to go through this monster before you even get close to me. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
You know, Jimmy Valiant, I've known you when you were in Memphis in 1978. Now you call yourself Jimmy Boogie Boogie Valiant. Well, let me tell you what Boogie is, Valiant. I'm a Canadian lumberjack. And you know what I do to get them trees down? I take an axe and I chop them down. But you're not a tree. You're a big man, you're a strong man, you're a fast man, and you may be a champion. But take a good look at one real champion here. I didn't come in this area to be nice, and I didn't come in this area to ask no quarters. I come here because I like to win, and to win for me, it doesn't make no difference of what I do. So whenever you want to get to that man back here, it'll be over my dead body, and I'm not ready to go yet.
All right, fans, and that'll do it for this week.
Can you imagine just a bus pulling up at a building, and the first thing you see, out steps Sir Oliver Humperdinck with that hair, with those clothes on, looking like that, and then following him out, you got Gene Anderson there, with his tick and twitch. Ivan Koloff steps out with his Russian chain around him. Leroy Brown then steps out. Paul Jones then steps out, just running his mouth. Then Greg Valentine. Then Joe LeDuc. It's not exactly the most cohesive group in the world or anything like that. You know, it's not presented in that fashion as a one-unit functioning stable where everything is kind of intertwined like the Horsemen were. But, man, you know, the Dangerous Alliance, the Four Horsemen, there's been plenty of great groups in pro wrestling. For a minute here, if you put all the names together, even though they're not exactly out there all together ever as a group, that's a pretty impressive damn stable that Sir Oliver Humperdinck has put together.
Yeah, that's a motley crew. You know, a little bit of everything. And during those interviews, I thought it was interesting that once again they mentioned Valentine from the Big Apple, or, you know, earlier on he wrestled in Madison Square Garden. I don't know. I guess their logic is that that's the big time and he could be in the big time, but he'd rather be with us.
Magazines.
It's just magazines. Weird to me how they keep mentioning New York. Go ahead.
Well, the reason, I think it's really about the magazines. It's about the fact that Madison Square Garden is the Mecca. It's close. Crockett and McMahon do have a good relationship. Obviously, Dory Funk Jr., you know, up from Florida now is the booker. There's always the historic relationship between McMahon and Graham. And, you know, with Valentine, remember, Valentine beat Bob Backlund, or the title was held up, and there was controversy over Bob Backlund being defeated by Greg Valentine at one point. So, you know, there's always that card where I think they do use it because it shows that, yeah, hey, he's in the big cities doing big towns, doing big things, you know. But I think it's also a reminder that Valentine beat all of those guys up there. And now I've cleaned it all up and now I'm coming back down again, you know, because they did the same thing with Slaughter.
Yeah, you know, it would have been curious if they had ever entertained showing footage of Valentine and Backlund on Mid-Atlantic, because I remember, I'm sure you've seen it, Mike, the Lawler-Hogan match where they would show Lawler whooping up on Hogan or show Lawler whooping up on Flair or Race, even though those guys were in different territories, because it would make Lawler look good. You know, I'm wondering if they ever entertained the thought of actually showing a clip of Valentine whooping up on Backlund or something like that.
Oh, I would have loved that. And you could have done it in a way where, you know, it shows Backlund against the ropes and looking bad, but then, you know, not obviously defeated, which is obviously what Memphis wanted you to believe, that Jerry Lawler, you know, where they would cut it or whatever it would be, where that to make sure that Lawler looked like he was coming out on top. You probably could have used footage,
right,
you know, from the WWF and not made Backlund look bad. Although I guess The only, I guess, danger that way could be, although it's still 100 miles away, is just the span between Richmond and D.C., and maybe there being overlap there. But, of course, maybe all the thinking about the, you know, this as it's 4D chess, and maybe it's not even that difficult either. But just Dangerous Alliance levels of talent there. So we've reached the end not only of this show, but of August, which I am very upset to see going away. I know we have a lot of great stuff coming up here, but man, I hate to see August go away. What a fun month this has been on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling.
And, you know, Mike, if I can, I would like to say that, you know, we've been doing this for over a year now. You know, we made it to the year milestone, and not only has this past month been fun of Mid-Atlantic, this past year's been awesome. And I wanted to thank you, Mike. I wanted to thank the great Brian Lass, Mid-Atlantic Gateway, for their support. And I also wanted to send a shout-out to the fans. You know, it's really cool, the fans of the podcast that hit me and Mike up on Facebook or Twitter. I know I enjoy reading the comments. It's fun to read somebody say, I was there the night Wahoo lost the belt, or I remember the strap match, and just to relive memories like that. So we appreciate the fans out there, and I've had a blast this past year, Mike, and I hope you have as well.
Oh, my God, I love this. It's so cathartic for me, as I've said many, many times, covering modern professional wrestling. You know, I enjoy it. I will always love pro wrestling, but if you said, hey, you got to stop watching that stuff and you can only watch one thing, what would it be? It would be Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And I will always, no matter what modern wrestling does to me, I will always have my memories, and that's all we want to do here. We want to resurrect memories, and we want to respect those memories, and we hope and we can create some new memories for people who come along and hear some of these clips and see some of these shows and want to get involved with it. We're very lucky. The bloodline of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, I think, will always be in professional wrestling. I think we see it in WWE, we see it in AEW, we see it in Ring of Honor. We see the bloodlines, the tree that Mid-Atlantic Wrestling has grown and provided fruit for, continue on for a long time. And I absolutely love doing this show here. And unfortunately, August is over. September is coming. That's okay, because we got a lot of great stuff coming up. But before I get into all that, we got to get to the results for this week, which I will do coming up right after this.
Let's take time for this commercial message about the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling events coming up in your area.
I just got to play that every time now. I can't help myself. But also taped on Wednesday, August 25th at WPCQ Studios, Worldwide Wrestling. And the results of that program went like this. Greg Valentine defeated Gary Black. King Parsons and Porkchop Cash defeated Bill White and the Ninja. Joe Ledoux defeated Ron Ritchie. Kelly Kanitsky defeated Paul Jones by DQ. And Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood defeated Jim Dalton and Juan Reynosa. On Friday night in Sumter, South Carolina, Private Canoodle and Private Nelson defeated Porkchop Cash and King Parsons. And Roddy Piper, Wahoo McDaniel, and Jay Youngblood defeated Paul Jones, Leroy Brown, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck. The same night in Newberry, South Carolina, Ricky Steamboat defeated Ivan Koloff, and Johnny Weaver defeated the Ninja by DQ. On Friday night in Richmond at the Coliseum, Porkchop Cash and King Parsons defeated the Privates. Jay Youngblood defeated the Ninja by reverse decision. Ricky Steamboat substituting for Wahoo McDaniel, and Roddy Piper defeated Paul Jones and Leroy Brown by DQ. And Wahoo, who was a sub for Jimmy Valiant, defeated Ivan Koloff in a Russian chain match. On Saturday night at the Hampton Coliseum, Wahoo McDaniel, Roddy Piper, and Johnny Weaver defeated Leroy Brown, Paul Jones, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck, while Mike Rotundo defeated the Scorpion, which may have been Bill White under a hood. On the 29th in Roanoke, Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a cage match, Ricky Steamboat defeated Matt Bourne, and the Privates defeated Jake Roberts and Jay Youngblood. Also on the 29th in Asheville at the Civic Center, Jay Youngblood defeated the Ninja, while Wahoo McDaniel and Roddy Piper defeated Leroy Brown and Paul Jones by DQ. On Monday the 30th in Fayetteville at Cumberland County Memorial Arena, Wahoo McDaniel and Ricky Steamboat defeated Leroy Brown and Sir Oliver Humperdinck, while Jay Youngblood defeated Private Canoodle. That same night in Greenville, Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff, while Jerry Briscoe and Roddy Piper defeated the Ninja and Greg Valentine. Tuesday in Raleigh on the 31st, Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a Siberian Salt Miner's Glove match, while Jack Briscoe defeated Paul Jones by disqualification. And in Columbia, South Carolina, at Township Auditorium, Private Canoodle defeated Jay Youngblood, while Wahoo McDaniel, Roddy Piper, and Ricky Steamboat defeated Leroy Brown, Private Canoodle, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck. And that takes us back around to Wednesday, September 1st, in Charlotte, North Carolina, WPCQ Studios, Channel 36. Here is the WWE Network preview for our next episode. September 4th, 1982. On this edition of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Roddy Piper and NWA United States Heavyweight Champion Wahoo McDaniel take on the Medic and the Gladiator in a tag team match main event. Jack Briscoe defends the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship against Paul Jones. All this and more. As I mentioned earlier on, if you like this show and would like to connect with it more, I invite you to follow us on all of our forms of social media, especially our Twitter. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And also, please support all of the shows here on the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. We don't condescend, and we are dedicated to preserving and accurately archiving the history of professional wrestling. And I'm proud that this show, executive produced by me, can be a part of that. For Roman Gomez, I'm Mike Sempervivi. Take us home, Uncle Bob.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.